Welcome back, everybody, to the Wall Street Coach Podcast. Today, I am a little scared to do this episode because it is definitely a lot more personal than any of the podcasts I normally record. I'm very fortunate in this vulnerable state to have my good friend, Dave Shoemaker, with me for this conversation. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast and for once again holding the space for me when I'm vulnerable.
Sure.
So
I mean, it's too bad it's not in person since I'm all the way back on the East Coast and it's a little colder here right now.
It is a little colder. Dave is in New Jersey, Asbury Park to be specific, where his amazing tattoo shop lives, Ninth Wave Tattoo. I'm going to just tell you guys a little bit about Dave's formal background, and then we'll talk about some of his informal background as well. Dave has been the owner of Ninth Wave, and he has been tattooing for 30 years while spending most of his career in New Jersey. He's also worked in New York, California, Pennsylvania, and internationally, and in Hawaii. He was here on the Big Island before I got here. Dave began to hone his style while working at New York Adorned in New York City, a very famous tattoo parlor, where he spent over 3 years. He's interested in creating quality tattoos in bold designs that contour and work really naturally with the body. He's versatile in his style, but his primary work style is large-scale Japanese designs and black pattern work influenced by traditional concepts from specific regions, including Polynesia. So tell us how did you even get started as a tattoo artist? When did that begin for you? I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was younger and just gone to see bands like punk shows and just seeing guys who were like older and with tattoos, and at the time I guess thinking it looked cool.
Yeah.
And then I was 16 when I first started, so yeah, I think just seeing it, like I think like any young kid, you just have a desire to be cool, so you're like, oh, maybe I'll get some tattoos as well. And then I could always kind of draw and stuff, and I ended up originally I was in high school. I left high school and I was living in Venice Beach, California. I left and I ended up buying tattoo equipment there and not really knowing what I was doing, and came back home to do an apprenticeship with somebody here. And that kind of just started it all off.
Wow. It's amazing. I got to meet Dave while he was doing a tattoo on a very dear friend of mine. And, it's got to be, 10, 17, 16 years ago? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a while ago, for sure.
It's at least 12, 13 years ago. I think it might be closer to 15. So this was a big tattoo you were giving this friend who was getting it on their back. And I had never been in a tattoo shop before, and Dave and I just clicked, and we both were readers, and we were talking about one particular book that we both had read that we really liked. I think it was it The Heart Aroused by David Wright?
Yeah, David Wright.
And I have to say, you know, a little judgmental of me, I did not expect the tattoo artist to have been so well read. And I was like, so we just got into this deep conversation, but unfortunately that interrupted that tattoo process. And my friend eventually kicked me out and said, you can't be here because you two keep chatting up about books. So that's how Dave and I met. And then a very unusual situation was coming up for me that I knew I had to take care of. And I was in New Jersey on the Jersey Shore house sitting for that friend. And I didn't know anybody in the Jersey Shore. And I knew I was going to need assistance for this situation. And I was, you know, kind of in my meditation and prayers, asking for guidance about how to do this with somebody. Who could I ask? And Dave's name came to me.
Why not a total stranger that just happened to share a book that nobody else seemed to have read?
Why not him?
And I mean, some people have read it, I guess.
Some people have, probably Dave White and his wife. But it is a bit of an obscure book, The Heart Aroused, and it's about the preservation of poetry in the corporate world and really in any kind of position or job. But I think because that book had, it was a book I actually gifted. I don't know if you know this. I gifted that book to everybody, almost everybody that I interviewed for my book, Transforming Wall Street. So yeah, it was a very impactful book for me because it talked about how even in the corporate world, even in the business world, you can keep your soul. And so the fact that you had read that, I'm sure that was part of what made me feel, you know, more comfortable having this conversation. But yeah, again, so this is an unusual conversation for me to have because not only am I going to talk with Dave about this, but I'm going to share too, guys, what happened. And the reason I'm recording this, let me tell you right out of the gate, is because one of the things I advocate all the time is for men especially to have a smash shack, to have a place or a room or a space where they can discharge anger and to, you know, physically, emotionally process out anger in a safe way that doesn't injure themselves or anybody else, but that to be comfortable with the expression of anger. And again, this was a very unusual time for me. And one of the things that I just come to terms with was clarity about my mom, who had, you know, significant mental illness. And so a lot of how she was treating me and treated me and spoke to me was not nice. And I had never really allowed myself to feel anger about that because anger wasn't a feeling or an emotion I was comfortable with. And at some point on this journey of mine, I had one spiritual teacher who basically said, like, you're gonna have to discharge that anger. And I was like, what anger? I don't even have the anger. And he was like, oh, you do, but you have to do some work to bring it up. And I had just spent 40 days doing this meditative process to lift it up. And that, Dave, I don't know if you even know that, was when I started to have these visions of a particular piece of furniture, a fireplace, which I'll have my editor put a picture of this fireplace. It wasn't mine. It was obviously my mother's, but I knew that that piece of furniture kind of represented some of misinformation I had received. And I felt that it was fake fireplace, also known as a hearth. And it just felt like that represented some of the misinformation I had been given. So the image that I had was that I had to not just throw this furniture out, this mantelpiece, but that I had to destroy it. But I didn't know how to do that. And that's when I was like, okay, for me to do it. Plus it was huge and it was super heavy. It likely was an antique. I think it was an antique when my mother got many years ago. So I thought, okay, first of all, I need a guy who's strong enough to help this thing, help me lift this thing. And second, how do I do that? So did I tell you any of this when I first met with you?
A little bit, because you were saying like, oh, this is kind of the last thing I have for my mother. And there was like a whole lead in, because I could tell, like, because we didn't know each other well. We had a conversation.
I invited you for coffee.
In the tattoo shop. But then, you know, I remember you were telling me a story, like, you know, there's those places where you can go and you can throw like glasses at a wall and like, you know, get stuff out, like this kind of cathartic expression or whatever. So there was like kind of the build up and the lead in and like, you know, to be honest, not really knowing where it was going. So, and then you came forward, you're like, I have this mantelpiece from my mother that's kind of the last thing I own. And you know, I just, there's a lot of emotion attached around this. And you know, I guess you were looking to, for somebody with a pickup and tools and strong enough to help you lift it in.
But obviously, in addition to that, I needed to be with somebody that I felt could hold the space for this, because, you know, I think I was feeling probably some shame over the fact that, like, this was sort of a, like, I want to say a violent, destructive activity. But, you know, this word seems so dramatic now in hindsight. But at the time, you know, I usually kind of have this good girl kind of way of living my life, right? Like, everything is kind of like ducks in a row. And so I think part of it too, Dave, to be honest with you, was like, you didn't know me. You didn't have context for me. You didn't have expectations of me. And that gave me this freedom to allow a part of myself to show that I never even let myself kind of see. So thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I just, you know, I wanted to have a conversation with you because it's like, it in a lot of ways was like a day I birthed myself, and you were like a priest of my experience. And that, I don't know if you remember what your backyard looked like the day we did that, but that would have put Bob Vila to shame.
Well, now I know never to piss you off, because I realize how this destruction you're capable of. So.
So true. Yeah. So just talk a little bit about, you know, I remember taking you to that coffee shop, asked me for coffee, and I was asking you questions about, you know, the Smash Shack. Had you ever heard of that? Had you ever done it? These were my ways of trying to find out if you were going to be comfortable with this concept. And you was like, you were like, yeah, I think sometimes expressing anger is good. And I was like, oh, thank God I could ask him about this. So I'm just curious, that day, what was it like for you after, you know, before we did it, just my asking you or telling you what I wanted to do? Like, what were you thinking?
I don't know. I mean, I think because we were just coming from a point from not knowing each other well, but like, you know, kind of like the, you know, the books we talked about were kind of like, you know, dealing with like vulnerability and thoughtful ways of living and stuff like that. So I think, I don't know. I was open to what you were saying. I was open to where you were at. I think as much as I can, I try and be in that spot of a place of openness, you know, with people and, you know, especially people, you know, you can have a connection to it. It makes it easier and feel like you can relate to more. So, yeah, I mean, it's not really the question you think you're gonna hear necessarily, but you know, it certainly made sense. There's times I've been frustrated in my life, and you know, it's good to have a way to express that and lean into it.
Yeah. So I get to your house. Well, no, you come because of the house that I was house sitting at. I had storage downstairs. So I don't even know how we got it up from the basement, because that thing was so freaking heavy. Do you remember how heavy it was?
I don't, but you know, I've owned a truck for a long time, so I've helped people move a lot of things.
Thank God. And
it was your friend who had gotten a tattoo whose house it was at, and then who actually ended up in Hawaii as well. So, you know.
That's right.
Back to Hawaii as well.
And that's how I got here, was because of him. Yeah. So, all right. So then, we decide on the day we're going to do this, and it was April. It was April 1st. It was April 1st. And
that's no joke.
No joke. And I remember in the middle of that day thinking how perfect I'm doing this on April Fool's Day, because the anger was, I felt I had been played as a fool. Yeah. So it was like this perfect symbolic day for me to kind of, you know, express my anger and frustration at having been foolish enough to think, you know, that all those terrible things she was telling me were true. And then to find out that they weren't true. It was just an incredible kind of like birth of the, you know, moving into what was going to become the rest of my life, you know? So you said, we get the fireplace. I remember downstairs, we get in the truck and then we go back to your place and your backyard was tricked out truly like a home renovation special. You had two picnic tables built.
I did buy an old home and I didn't really know much about working on a home. So I learned a lot of things owning that home, but I did, luckily for you, I had plenty of tools for you to choose from that would, you know, lend themselves to destruction. And yeah, you know, I guess I waited to get there and then I just brought some different tools out, like, you know, like hammer, axe, maybe sledgehammer. I don't know.
You had a sledgehammer.
I never even got a chainsaw in there, but I'm not sure if that
two
was
two chainsaws. Right. You taught me how to use a chainsaw. You gave me the goggles and you taught me how to use one of the chainsaws and I used it.
So there was options. That was good.
I had like 15 or 17 tools to choose from. Wow. And you even had, what was it called? It was like a particular kind of box for the glass that might have to be broken because there were like these glass lights that were part of the decorative feature. Anyway, two chainsaws, and then you gave me goggles and you said, you're going to need to wear these if you use this chainsaw.
Well, safety first.
And that's why this is so important, guys, because if you're going to ever do this, I want you to get, like, you were very careful that whatever I was going to do out there, I would be safe. And I was. But the best part, so you show me how to use the equipment, and then you went inside and gave me privacy. And you were like, let me know when you're done. So yeah. I had the freedom and the privacy and the space to really just take as long as I needed to, because it was obviously an emotional experience. And that was pretty powerful. I don't know if you heard it or could hear it where you were in the house or if you were even listening. But I mean, what was that like for you when you went inside?
It's a little awkward that there's a stranger out there just destroying things on your back deck with some random tools. I'm sure I must have heard it. I'm sure I just found something to keep myself occupied. Like, all right, I guess we'll go find something to do for a bit, however long that may be. You know, I don't know. But I, you know, much like you, I've never been in that situation. Because when we were, when you asked me about, you know, mm-hmm. getting together and talking about this, I'm like, oh, well, I'm like, I think there's a part of the story I never told you. And you're like, oh, what was that? I'm like, well, we should really wait till we're online.
Yes,
and we
can yes, right. It. No, tell me.
So, I mean, this is the point where it comes in. Maybe there was a little bit of lull or something. And I come walking down the steps and, like, you know, I'm like walking to the kitchen and peering outside. And you were kind of, you know, you look pretty upset and you were kind of crying. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just going to go back upstairs for a while. I'm like, I don't know what's going on out here, but I'm like, I'm not sure I want to walk right into this right now. I'm like, I'm going to give her some more time. I'm like, you know, there's the act of destruction, but then, you know, there's the emotional follow-up with it too. So I'm like, I'm going to give her some time for that. I'm not ready for that one. It, you know, we worked up that one over time, you know. So I'm like, oh, we can talk about anything now. But like at that moment, I was like, I'm going to leave her with those emotions right now.
Thank you for doing that. Honestly, I think that was best because I was, you know, it was, I had to get myself into a state to get angry. Like anger is so foreign to me that I keep it so buried that I had to kind of take myself into a couple of places to access the anger. And it was really hard in the beginning to hit that piece of furniture. First of all, because it was beautiful. Second of all, because I knew it represented something my mother really loved. And because of what it represented, you know, just growing up with it. But it was just that sense of a statement. Like, I needed to make a statement to myself that wasn't going to kind of hold me back anymore. So having access to that anger, it was not immediate. Like, and as I started to destroy it, as I started to take it apart, I could feel the anger was kind of being loosed, and right. I was able to feel it. But it took, it wasn't a natural place for me to go into. So I'm grateful that you didn't come out, because I probably was trying to get my way, you know, into it.
Yeah.
That's funny to know, though. Poor you. You're like, I mean, you gave me this experience. Like, I was like, maybe he does this for other people all the time.
I mean, we probably do with our friends in much smaller, subtler ways.
Yeah. 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 But you did. You held the space so graciously. Without any judgment, like, you never judged me. You always made me feel throughout that whole experience that, you know, it was just an average day, and I was just doing an average ceremony.
Yeah. Now, it makes me think, like, when I was younger, I did fiberglassing with surfboards, and, you know, it's kind of a thankless job, I think, fiberglassing. But, you know, I love surfing and this and that. And there was things were changing to people I was working with. And I was working at a small facility that I had set up on my back of where I was living. And I remember, like, the chemicals aren't mixed right. It can become very hard to do. And I had all these boards to do, and they mixed the chemicals wrong. And it became so much harder to do. And I was just, you know, sanding them out, a whole series of boards, group of boards for somebody. And I remember getting so mad and feeling, and not know what to do. And I remember kind of just, like, putting a couple holes in the wall with my grinder. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? But I was just like, at the time, I was just so frustrated, and just like, okay, this is like a cathartic release, you know? So.
Yeah, totally. But I don't think there is anything wrong with us when that happens. I think it's just truly a discharge. I mean, did you feel better after those holes?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean, I think you know, if you can have that and to get it out, it can be cathartic.
Yeah.
You know? And I think kind of what you're talking about is, how do you do that in a healthy way?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Dave's also, you know, not just any surfer, but a Jersey Shore surfer. That means he, like, wears the wetsuit and is in frigid cold water. And you've surfed for how many years now?
Yeah, I mean, I've surfed my whole life since I was a little kid. You know, there's a few years there where I really didn't much. And then, you know, it can be warmer in the summer, but certainly if you want to surf through the winter, it's a little thicker wetsuit.
It's a little thicker. It's a little thicker. All right. And so I remember finally going into the house, telling you I was finished. You helped me take this. I did a pretty good job, as I recall. I got it down to the boards.
I don't remember much about it. I don't remember, like, that's kind of like about the tail end of what I remember. Like, I don't remember what we did with it.
I remember
what it was in.
I remember we put all the pieces in the back of your pickup truck and we drove to the dump.
Wow. All right.
We got to the dump and I never saw this kind of a dump before. I guess it was like for big debris or something. And you backed the pickup truck over what looked like a landfill or some kind of place where everything got thrown down into. And you put your hands in, like, I start grabbing it out and throwing things in, and you went to do it, and then you stopped yourself, and you looked at me, and you said, "Now get that shit out of my truck." Right. And I was like, gladly. And it was like, you knew I had to throw every piece into that dump by myself. And even that, I was like, this guy must hold this ceremony for people all the time, because he did it so flawlessly.
Maybe I was just a little tired that day. I'm like, I'll just let her tidy up this work, and I'm just going to go sit in the cab with the AC on. I guess in April, we didn't really need the AC, though.
Probably not.
Probably a beautiful day.
Nope. You intentionally stopped because you could tell, like, I had to be the one who did it. And it was so cathartic. Every piece.
Closing part of that process.
It's a closing part of that process. And I'm just like curious, you know.
If I'm going to get into this in the future for other people now, is this my going to be my end?
It could be. It could be a sign.
I might be getting some interesting emails going forward now.
You might. I think people will see this and say, I want to hire Dave to have an anger ceremony for me.
Anyway, so sorry to interrupt.
No, it could be a really very lucrative side hustle. I would have paid anything back then. I was just lucky you were willing to do it with me. So, but I just felt like that process was so liberating for me, so healing for me. And yet I don't know that I would have done it if it wasn't for that spiritual teacher insisting that I have my anchor addressed. And I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it if you hadn't agreed. So I just wanted this story to kind of be shared with people so they can see like that there's nothing wrong with anger, that you do sometimes have to really discharge it in a physical sort of way. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to have or find a brand new friend who is able to hold space for you, then you can have that too. Did you yourself ever have anything like that for yourself?
Well, not really. Like in that, maybe what I was saying before, just like moments where you feel frustrated and you just act out on those moments. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I don't think people talk about it a lot. It's like with this, with like healthy ways of how to, you know, kind of lean into it and discharge it. So, it's good. We all feel it at different times. And, you know, I think a lot of people can hold on to it and it comes out in different ways. So I think it's a really healthy thing to look at that, see what, for what it is, and then, you know, find a healthy way to let go of it as well.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it can serve us maybe to move us forward, but to really hold on to it, it doesn't really serve us.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm just curious, you know, do you still have that sailboat that you built?
Well, a regular motorboat. I started building it. It just moved into my front yard today. I live in like a more of a neighborhood, and the place where it was stored, I just brought it back. I started building a 29-foot fishing boat, and I'd gotten about halfway done. The hull was just about finished, and it's upside down on a trailer. And then, so I've been sitting on that project for a while. Okay. Having a son certainly slowed that down. So yeah,
I bet.
Yeah, now that's in my front yard. I think I'm either going to get back to the project, or I'll just sell it for somebody that maybe wanted to project to finish themselves. So we'll see.
But I'm just kind of curious, as you were building what you did build, did you find that it was a cathartic process as well, just being able to kind of keep pouring energy into something that's, you know, so creative?
No.
No? Was it just, what was it? Was it hard?
but you know what's funny? Talking about what we're talking about, I remember like my ex-wife and I had separated a couple of years ago, and I remember feeling so frustrated right when we were in the throes of it. I remember thinking, I'm like, I want to go outside. I'm like, I want to get my chainsaw and just cut that thing in half. You know, just feeling that anger, feeling that emotion, going to react to it.
Yep.
And then, you know, luckily thinking about it, I'm like, oh, you know what? That the only person that hurts is myself. And then I have a boat cut in half.
Yeah.
But no, it's interesting because people have these ideas of what they think it was like to build a boat. And to be honest with you, it's kind of stressful. I'd never done anything like that. I had bought this house, you know, where you had come to and like kind of learn to work with tools build things, fix things. So I'd done fiberglassing in the past. So the boat was made of wood and fiberglass. I'm like, okay, I get the back end, the fiberglassing part, and the woodworking I have some experience with, and it's very easy. But it's just to be like working full time and then trying to build this boat, it was like a little bit of a time crunch. So there was always that little bit of pressure, like, okay, I'm doing this thing I completely don't know how to do.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit over my head with it. Like even when you would read the manual, I remember there's a forum for people were like, I don't understand the directions. They're like, you just start the build, and once you finish that one piece, the next piece will make sense. So it's kind of just going from one, not knowing, learning what you're doing, and getting the next piece and trying to figure that out. So it had its moments of like definitely feeling great, but it was like kind of stressful too. I think because I'm not a woodworker, I think people have this romantic idea of what it is to build a boat. And it's like, it's a lot of hard work when you're building a boat, predominantly alone, a 29-foot boat. And you don't totally know what you're doing.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, I just remembered seeing it in that storage place. What was it that it was in? It was a huge space that you had.
There's an airplane hangar.
Airplane hangar. And yeah. I just was shocked at what I did see and how you had put that together. That was impressive. I was like, and you told me that too. I think that you had, never done this before, really didn't know what you were doing. I was like, how do you do this when you don't know what you're doing?
I guess you just fake it till you make it.
Totally. Maybe just one step at a time.
I mean, I was building it to fish here locally, kind of inshore, but then for us, we get tuna offshore, 100 miles offshore. So I was building it to be able to do that as well. So I mean it's amazing to think like, oh, okay, I'm gonna build this thing, this boat, and be able to take that fishing 100 miles offshore, so I guess that would be the test if it really holds up.
For sure Well, maybe you will finish it and find out.
I mean, it's interesting too, because where I live, before I lived in the woods on acreage, and now I live in like a, in Asbury, it's like a little small kind of town city kind of vibe. And
yep.
So I'm sure I have the neighbors wondering what the hell is going on over there.
Everybody's looking next door now. Well, they just actually could be somebody there who wants to help.
Yeah, no, totally. There's people that have been around town that have asked about helping. I said, like, listen, if you're foolish enough to think you want to help me do this, I will gladly accept that help.
I will welcome you in.
And then, if I end up, maybe it doesn't work out, nobody wants to buy it, maybe we can just destroy it. You can fly out. We'll destroy it.
Definitely. We'll use both
chainsaws. Maybe we'll burn it this time. Well, I don't know, with the fiberglass, though.
Maybe tougher. I think it's the chainsaws. Those are my favorite equipment. Yeah. All right. So Ninth Wave Tattoo is your tattoo shop. You've had it, I think you were just opening it when I moved to Hawaii 10 years ago. So tell us a little bit about your business. You also do pottery. Just talk a little bit about that. Also, give us your Instagram handle if people want to check you out online.
Yeah. I mean, I've been tattooing a really long time. And I think I wasn't always the easiest employee. So I think eventually I just realized the best thing to do. I was partners in a shop for 10 years too, but we just had different ideas. So eventually I just ended up doing my own shop and, kind of pursuing the idea of how I wanted to do it. And the shop I worked at in New York was more of like kind of a boutique-y vibe and not your traditional tattoo shop. So I think I was just interested in opening something different. And, and at the time, my wife and I were both doing pottery. So we had created some pottery and we would create these vases, and there'd be different carvings in it, which were similar to tattoos and stuff I did. So it's just like, it all kind of tied together. It wasn't your typical shop, like, oh, you come in and here's a design on the wall, you pick that. It's like, I did a lot of custom work. So it's just, we kind of had like a little retail thing up front I do a bunch of, tattoos that can be influenced by like Hawaii, like we're saying, different Polynesian things, where it's, just these large black patterns that fit on the body. I try and do it in a respectful way that's, honoring maybe the culture it came from, but kind of like, I'm not really looking to steal their ideas, but just, working with different, things that represent fish or the ocean or mm-hmm. different things like that with nature. So.
Weren't you flown into Hawaii to do tattoos?
Yeah. I had a client from, he worked at Longwood Gardens. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No.
It's a really beautiful place outside of Philly. He worked there for a long time and retired from that. And he decided he wanted to get tattooed. So I started tattooing him and doing some large design work, these large spiral stuff, kind of influenced by Borneo style designs. And he, after a few years, had moved to Hawaii, the big island up in the mountains of Kona. And yeah, he wanted to kind of keep that same theme going. So he just thought, you know, maybe it's best to fly me out. And I wasn't necessarily opposed to that, you know. So I come out for a week at a time and tattoo him. And you know, I would surf and did some spear fishing and some cycling. And I realized that's not a bad way to work.
Oh.
Up the mountains overlooking the ocean. And then, but yeah, it was a great experience. It was like, it was a fun project to work on, and it was a hard, challenging project, but yeah, it was really fun. He was an interesting guy and we had a good experience.
Beautiful. And then, so your shop now is in the heart of Asbury, and how can people find you on Instagram?
Ninth Wave Tattoo is our shop account. And then mine, I think it's Dave Shoemaker. I think I was in early enough that I just got my name, nothing
good.
Else.
That's the way to do it.
But yeah, we have a year ago I had expanded, took over the business next door to make it a little bit bigger and accommodate more people. So yeah, we're just in the process of growing the shop and trying to do good tattoos and treat people well along the way.
And have good conversations about books.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to a lot of different conversations. So,
yes, you are. Yes,
I've
you
covered
are.
A lot of topics over the years.
I bet you have. I bet you. I have to say, I'd never expected to have such an intellectual conversation in my first visit to a tattoo place.
But it's funny too. I think one of the other books we talked about was Barbara Brennan.
Yes, I forgot about that.
And that, I mean, that was just random. I just saw one of her books and it had like a nice picture on the cover. I'm like, oh, that would make a cool reference for a tattoo. But then reading about it was pretty interesting too. So yeah, there were kind of like two books I spoke to you about that like nobody else in my circle had ever kind of read. So we're like, oh, okay, what's going on over here? What's this person up to?
Totally, totally. It was an unexpected conversation. And Asbury itself, just for context, guys, is like, the Stone Pony is one of the most, you know, famous. It's where Bruce Springsteen got his start, Bon Jovi, Pete Yorn. Who else was there? Like, that was just...
Johnny Cash was there back in the day, too. He was owners in one of the hotels there, the Berkeley. It's been there for a long time. So it's always been like a big music town. And a lot of bands have come through there. And they, you know, they've done festivals there. There's, you know, larger festivals going on now. So it's always kind of revolved around music. And it's always been a little bit more diverse with different stuff going on.
Yeah.
Compared to other parts of New Jersey, which is nice.
Yeah. It's got, to me, it just has that Brooklyn vibe, like chic, cool, hip. It's got, you know, it's got music. It's got an art scene. It's got cool shops like yours. It's just, I don't know, just a very unusual kind of vibe and community. It feels like a real community of people, you know, the coffee shops, the restaurants, all of it. It's a beautiful town. I love it. Yeah, it's good. Dave, thank you for doing this conversation today.
Thank you
I
so much.
I just wanted to share some of the magic that you facilitated for me. So I will never be able to thank you enough for it. And I'm so glad we're still friends all these years later. Thank you guys for watching the Wall Street Coach podcast. I hope this inspires you to be with maybe some harder to be with feelings. And I hope you can find somebody who can hold space as graciously as Dave Shoemaker. Aloha for now.